All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here, solo edition, doing an interview today with David Wurzburger all about the Brooklyn Nets, a team that I wish had kind of gone about their offseason differently, but they are focused on the future and building in a direction that they hope gets them out of this long, dark nightmare of not having any draft picks. Before we get there, I want to tell you about the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. They have been doing hard work all summer producing three podcasts a week about NBA history, specifically the 1970s, basketball mysteries of the 70s on the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. Have been very entertaining, really great job. Make sure you subscribe to that podcast, leave them a great review on iTunes. Also, speaking of reviews, we are always giving out Fan Essentials boxes for people who write iTunes 5-star reviews. Any review you write in the month of October, you will be entered to win a box, and this will keep going forever. Month by month, if we get more than 10 reviews, we will give away 2 boxes. We really appreciate all of you guys who have written reviews so far. And remember, go to fanessentials.net and use that code FBBF and get all the essentials you need. My guest today is a writer for Vice Sports and the host of the Locked On Nets podcast, Mr. David Wurzburger. How are you doing, David?
I'm good. How are you doing, Keith? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm great. So my first extremely researched question, Nets fan, what's that like?
So I'm actually a Knicks fan, believe it or not.
You're a Knicks fan and you've been stuck covering the Nets.
Yeah, essentially. stuck is a strong word. Listen, I'm from
Brooklyn. Not your word, my word.
Right. I've lived in Brooklyn my whole life, basically, except for when I went away for college. And I don't know, I do have a fondness towards the team. It's cool to see Brooklyn have its own basketball team, even though the fans haven't exactly shown that same excitement after those first couple seasons. But yeah, no, it's weird that I've sort of, I guess just the Knicks have so many people covering them all over just many basketball platforms. I guess I just saw the Nets as this little entity that no one cared about. And I thought, oh yeah, sure. I mean, they've got some interesting things going on. Why not?
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. So how long have you been covering the Nets?
Well, Locked On Nets just started a couple weeks ago. But in previous years, I've written about them for ESPN's True Hoop Network. And just, they're on local TV, so I'll be tweeting about them often. Just even if I'm doing general NBA writing 1 year, whatever it is, I have them on local TV. So I'll probably be watching their games and tweeting about them. And I think now is a good time for everybody to take a closer look at the Nets because they really have a sense of direction. I don't know if you're going to ask about this anyway coming up, but they have a real sense of direction. They're building a young and exciting team. And Jeremy Lin's back in sort of a place where he really, his career sort of set off in the first place. And he's sort of back in that same environment, not only just in New York, but a team that's built for him almost. So it's going to be fun to watch.
So what you're saying is there's plenty of seats on the bandwagon if people want to get on early.
Yeah, I mean, or at least just watch. Like, let's take baby steps before we go to bandwagon, right? Let's get some general NBA attention maybe from casual fans. Then we'll talk bandwagon.
Okay, before we go any farther, I do want to ask, though, we always throw in some breakfast talk. Being in Brooklyn, do you have any good or favorite breakfast spots there?
See, the beauty about Brooklyn is every other corner deli will just have the best bagels.
Yeah.
Their bagels will be better than any of the other 49 states bagels, any of the world's bagels, just any corner spot. Some people will be like, let's go to Dunkin' Donuts, let's go to one of these chains, whatever. All this bagel spots, hot, whatever. No. Any random corner deli will have the absolute best bagels. And I think that's the way to go when it comes to breakfast. But I'm trying to think here. If there are actually any like favorite spots, it's usually just the corner deli. Like I moved a couple of times since living here, and I would just the first thing I'd have to hunt down just some random family-owned deli and try their bagels and think it's amazing.
That's pretty great. Growing up in Nashville, Tennessee, I don't think I heard the word bagel until Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I mean, I
could, you're missing out.
That could just be my upbringing. Maybe it just wasn't a part of our, you know, it wasn't in the regular rotation of breakfasts. But so, yeah, so I guess later in life, like, I like bagels, but I don't crave them. Like, I've talked to a couple people who just love a good bagel, and it's like, nah, I never had that. But I respect it. So talking about the Nets, as you said, they do have Jeremy Lin. They don't have a whole lot else, and they are kind of on this path of, you said, like, things are looking up. They have a direction. So they obviously, they mortgaged their future in a Faustian deal with the Celtics and lost control of most of their picks for like a 5-year span. So do you think that things, now that they have a new direction with Sean Marks, the GM, new coach, Kenny Atkinson, so you think they're in the right direction, and do you think the nadir has passed, or do you think it's still dipping down before they can like turn it back up towards the light?
Well, they're definitely on an upward track, but it's not as if they're the Sixers or the Lakers where they can quickly assemble these like top five picks and just say, oh, okay, we're building around these guys, right? Because they still don't have their control of their first round pick till like 2019 or something. So they're on the right direction. I would say it's an upward slope from here, because like, look at what Sean Marks has done without picks already. He's only been around for like a year or less. He got Chris McCullough, first round pick, Caris LeVert, yep, first round pick. He collected all these sort of second round picks, D League guys, Sean Kilpatrick, that are really intriguing. Like, none of these guys may pan out, right? But they are intriguing, and one of them could be a diamond in the rough. He shed a lot of cap space. He's got these guys that, like Trevor Booker, he's just a good player. Like, he's just a good basketball player. He's not much else, but even while the Nets are rebuilding, like, he can help there, and he could stay on for after that when the Nets are actually trying to make the playoffs or whatever. He's just a good, like, he's on a good contract, and he's a positive guy on the court. Right. And the Nets just didn't have a lot of those guys. They had, coming up here, they had these stars, and then just, whoever we can grab off the minimum contract market, essentially. So they're just good pieces here. And I think Nets fans should be excited, because it's just been a great direction ever since Sean Marks took over and he hired Kenny Atkinson, which was a great hire. No one had anything bad to say about Atkinson or that hire.
Yep. So it sounds like you've fully drunk the Kool-Aid. You're all in optimism that they're building in the right direction and assembling some pieces for, you know, establishing, I guess the catchphrase is always like establishing a winning culture and all about player development. So you support, in retrospect, you support like trading Thaddeus Young for Caris LeVert now that you know it's Caris LeVert. Like, you just think the option of like taking the lottery chance of this guy might be good, it's worth giving up a player who you already know is like kind of good?
Here's the thing. It's the real thing here is about the process, and the word process has become such a cliche with the 76ers, right? And you mentioned building a winning culture, things teams always say, but those things are so important, and the Nets are actually doing it if you're paying close attention. So am I crazy about the Caris LeVert pick? I don't know. I don't know much about prospects, honestly. I don't know much about his foot, so we'll see, I guess. But, you know, trading Thaddeus Young, who is a guy that's good for contending or playoff teams and is absolutely useless for a rebuilding team, yeah, sure, trade him for a first-round pick. That's great. You need first-round picks. It's just about the process for the Nets, right? Like, the execution might not work. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Chris McCullough, Sean Kilpatrick, Caris LeVert, Isaiah Whitehead, they could all end up busts. Who knows, right? But if you're doing it this way, if you're trying it, and if you're actually gathering all this young talent, you're doing the right thing.
I think my biggest kind of disappointment so far with the Nets, I don't know, and it's hard to be disappointed because they're stuck in a corner and they can't do much, but they do seem to be, like you talked about bringing in prospects, but for me, as an outsider, just someone on League Pass flipping around, like, to me, it's like they've picked up all these kind of borderline D-League guys who the chance of them being good is so low that, like, I actually, and because they're, you talk about rebuilding, the fact that they don't possess their picks, they don't control their picks, I kind of wished we were going to see a thing which is foreign to the NBA where they're just trying to win now. You know, like, I wish they signed more short-term contracts of just trying to get legit NBA bodies in there to just try to win some, you know, like win some games over these next 2 years, which is not normally what, you know, NBA teams are now so focused on. It's become the culture of we have to build towards the future. And I think they could have maybe tried to bring in some more, I don't want to say actual NBA players, but I'll say actual NBA players.
No, that's the right way to say it, yeah.
More like the Premier League, where I don't follow the Premier League closely, but like each team's goal is just to win as many matches as they can. And a lot of the teams are like, hey, let's finish mid table. And the fans are like, yeah, this is great. Hopefully we can finish 11th or 12th. And so my mind, I was kind of hoping that the Nets would do some wild things, like try to bring in guys on massive 2-year deals just to know, like, hey, we don't have our draft picks. Let's just try to entertain our fans. We'll bring along some of our young guys earlier. And then, you know, maybe we win 28, 30 games. And that's kind of fun for people. People like rally around Jeremy Lin and some of the young guys. But, you know, I'm not sure that this whole having maybe 10 guys who are fringe role players is, you know, it's another option because they're going to win, I don't know, maybe 20 games again. If they're, you know, I don't know what their over under is, but I don't think the optimism is high. Yeah. So what do you feel about just the concept of, hey, let's just try to win basketball games, even if it doesn't necessarily bring in like a second round pick, you know, like I feel like so many of their assets are like, let's just get an asset for the sake of an asset, as opposed to trying to actually win some basketball games.
Yeah. It's interesting because the Knicks are in a similar situation almost, because they had Porzingis, right? He came in last year, rookie season, looked so good, looked like a future superstar. So you had to consider, all right, maybe we should ditch Melo and just start the rebuild around him. But instead, they went in the opposite direction. Like basically you said, let's maximize the value of Melo, get some, how do I put this, players. I'll just say good players in. I was going to say stars, but
starters. We can go starters, yeah, I guess.
You know, Rose and Noah and guys that could or could not help us compete. And that's what they're doing. With the Nets, you know, the idea isn't bad, right? You know, try and make things fun for the fans, but it's hard to do that without jeopardizing what you want to build, right? And the more of these fringe assets you bring in, the better chance one of them turns into a Hassan Whiteside, a Patrick Beverley, or whatever. And you look at the Nets are somewhat, like, they're not, they haven't brought in complete crap, right? They have NBA players, just not a whole lot of them. They have Jeremy Lin, Brook Lopez, I mentioned Trevor Booker, Luis Scola can still play a little bit. And if you notice that the older guys they did bring in, I mean, these are guys that will help build the culture. They are well-liked around the league. They've been on winning teams. You know, Randy Foy, he's not going to contribute a whole lot on the court, but he can come in and sort of – the Nets have a lot of shooting guard wing prospects, and Foy could help them out. So I think with the Nets, it's hard to sort of – pay someone huge amounts of money for 2 years just to come in and try and win games while you're trying to build this culture, while you're trying to make the young guys the importance. It's a really tough line to balance, but I get it, you know, wanting to see them win games. And I think they're going to win more games than people give them credit for. Granted, Brook Lopez might not be here by the end of the season, so that'll tick down the win columns a bit. And, you know, they're about one injury away from really being a D-League team. Yeah. I think Lin and Lopez is going to be a fun little pairing. Trevor Booker is going to help. I they also brought in Justin Hamilton. He's not going to be huge, but like they are like a complete D-League team. I want to say they do have some talent. And
yeah, well, so
this is also the first year, right? They only had so much money to spend, and they were gunning for like really good guys like Alan Crabb and Tyler Johnson. So maybe next year they'll could see how this young core is doing, maybe switch that up a little bit, and they'll also bring in some more NBA talent.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Randy Foy, and that's a guy to me where I think Harala Bob refers to him as like the garbage time Jordan, because this is the guy for me where it's like he said the things about, you know, like I'm a veteran, I can show the right way, but in my mind this is a guy who again just chases garbage time stats, and so he saw the vacuum that is the Brooklyn Nets is like, oh my God, I'm gonna get my points on.
I'm gonna get all the garbage time points.
Yeah. One of those guys who we didn't mention that I did actually really like the signing is the Grievous Vasquez for 1 year.
Yeah, I forgot
because
Vasquez.
He's a proven good player who really tanked his value last year by being hurt in Milwaukee. So he has a chance to come in and, you know, he's a good ball player. I think he might be one of the guys who the Nets, maybe Nets fans aren't excited about, but it's like you look at the depth chart, like, you know,
he could stay on for a while.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt. Speaking of those restricted free agents that they didn't get, which one of those were you more hopeful about getting, Allen Crabbe or Tyler Johnson?
Well, I'd want Allen Crabbe because I think he's a better prospect than Johnson. But Johnson had the whole poison pill contract that Miami would have to swallow, and they did. So
yeah.
That's why I was more hopeful about Tyler Johnson. That seemed more realistic because Miami, right. I don't know the exact figures, but Miami has to pay something ridiculous for his last 2 years on the contract or whatever. But yeah, I really love Allen Crabbe's game, but I was disappointed the Nets couldn't grab those two. But that's just reality about restricted free agency nowadays.
Yeah, but to your knowledge, did they throw big money? Because I feel like Woj reported that they were trying to get Marvin Williams, and that was actually a guy I'd circled for them, like, let's give Marvin Williams 2 years, $50 million. Like, to your knowledge, you know, oof, if they did throw something big like that, because again, like pretend, you know, it's Monopoly money. Like these 2 years, we don't have draft picks. Let's just get a decent, you know, like an above average power forward guy to come in and set the culture. Cause again, I'm still worried about the culture when you have nine guys who, I don't know, that's an estimate, nine guys who aren't legit NBA role players and who have never really been in the process of being on good teams. Like, you have Jeremy Lin, you have Brook Lopez, and then it's like, I guess Vasquez can set an example. Like Scola, you hope sets an example. So I thought getting more of those culture guys as opposed to, because I think it's one of those things where you have young teams and you have like Isaiah Whitehead and, you know, Chris McCullough looking at each other like, is this how we do it? I don't know. let's do what these guys are, doing. Like, you know, like a Tayshaun Prince or a Kendrick Perkins, like a guy who isn't even going to play really, but just like sets up that culture. Yeah. Matt Bonner. Seems like Sean Marks would be buddies with Matt Bonner. You know?
Matt Bonner would be cool. Yeah. I mean, one or more of those guys would be nice, but there are only so many roster spots. I guess they got to save one for one of these fringe assets.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you never know what might have been. Maybe they thought these veterans were enough. I mean, who knows? It's really hard to tell unless you're in the team.
Right.
But I think it's a pretty good group to sort of help these young guys out. And they're also like the Nets aren't – how am I going to put this? These are all really smart guys. And even the prospects were sort of known in college for like the, you know, not really having any problems, any off-court problems, right?
Yeah.
So I think the Nets are sort of hedging their bets there as well.
Tell me about some of those prospects. Like, I actually really enjoy – one of my things is I really enjoy watching kind of the bad basketball teams in the NBA. I get ribbed by my co-hosts that, like, that I don't watch, you know, like the Lakers – I mean, the Thunder and the Warriors and, like, those big games because I'm watching, you know – I'm watching the Nets and the Sixers play. But but even with that said, I feel like I missed a lot of the Nets games last year. And I have like the barely fuzziest notion of even like what Rondae Hollis-Jefferson does. So what can you tell me about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson? Like, I can fake it, but honestly, I don't know much about him.
All right. Here's your Rondae Hollis-Jefferson 101 course. He's he's probably the Nets' best prospect. Like, he's a guy that most people would say, all right, he can be an NBA starter. And his floor is like – his floor is like Tony Allen, honestly. This guy,
well, you just mentioned like my favorite player. So you're saying worst case scenario, he is a first team all defense, lockdown, good starting player.
Maybe not first team all defense, but okay. He was ridiculous defensively last year for a rookie. Like, if you just took out those little rookie mistakes he made, like silly gambles, things like that, and even that, so. What makes him so special is not only is he a smart defensive player, he's crazy athletic. Like, he's so long and tall and fast. His strides are huge. He would make these really bad gambles that, like, rookies make, right? They have to get accustomed to the NBA game. So he'll gamble, get way out of position, and then just recover so quickly and still make a positive impact on that defensive play. And you'll just sit there like, well, the basketball nerds that see that play out will sit there and go like, what the heck? This kid's going to be crazy good at defense. So that's the real promising thing about Hollis Jefferson. He's going to be a really good defender. He jumps up super high. He's really like an awesome defensive prospect. But he's been compared to MKG a lot because his offense is not quite there. Not the best ball handler. Can't shoot the three at all yet. Well, we're seeing. Apparently he was working hard on it this summer, so we'll see, but I doubt it. He had a really really messed up form. So it'd be tough to get that to an NBA, like a passable level. But his mid-range shot looked okay last year. He likes to get in the post a little bit. He thrives on cuts and offensive rebounds, things that non-shooting guys really need to thrive on to get NBA minutes. So that's basically what you'll get with him. He's also a good rebounder. I think he's going to be really fun to watch this year. Like, he was super fun to watch last year until he got hurt.
Yeah.
But do you want me to run through any of the other prospects?
Well, I mean, sure. So him and Chris McCullough, I think, are the both, as first-round picks, we assume they have the highest upside. And again, Chris McCullough, like, he's kind of a stretch four athletic guy, but maybe he, you know, struggles with injury. That's my elevator pitch knowledge of Chris McCullough.
McCullough is, so I'm going to channel Charles Barkley here. I forgot who he said this about, but he said, like, this kid's going to be great if he ever learns how to play basketball. And that's kind of how I feel.
McCullough. I got it. Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, it's not that extreme, but Chris McCullough is, you look at him and just the tools he has physically. And like, again, with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but McCullough is long and can jump and he's a gazelle. He's like the 6'10 long stretch four that could, like, with his body, you think can guard five and even stick with some threes and twos. Like, he's just this long and lanky, but super quick, jumps high, athletic specimen. But then you see him play. It's rough. We don't really know what he can do yet. Like, you see his jump shot form, you see him make threes in warm-ups, but then he gets to the game and can't really connect that well from there. He makes a lot of really silly mistakes, like over the back fouls, defensive mishaps, things like that. So I actually had Sam Vecenie, who was a college basketball writer at CBS Sports, on my podcast. And we were talking about McCullough, and he basically said he's a blank slate. And I don't think I could describe him in any better way. He's a total blank slate. Like, we have to see what the Nets can work on him with. But he's a big man, so I don't think we should sort of judge him on this year even, especially since last year he was coming off an ACL tear, played like 20 games, if it was even 20, I don't exactly remember. So let's look at him next year and the year after that, and then let's start drawing some conclusions.
Do you think he is going to be, my curiosity is how he fits into the big man rotation. Like, can he play any five at all? Like, would he be able to back up, you know, Brook Lopez?
Maybe not now. I'm sure Atkinson might try him there. Atkinson's going to try a bunch of crazy stuff. Booker at the five, Scola at the five. And really, when you have these, like Scola, he's a good veteran. He'd help out a contending team right now. But the Nets aren't really trying to win games.
Right.
I guess, like, they're not going to win more than 25 games, maybe. So, I'm, like, Scola's minutes are super expendable. Like, if you want to try and get McCullough some real NBA minutes out there, yeah, you can bench Scola for a game. Nothing's going to happen, right?
Yep.
So, he could crack the rotation and, you know, play some real minutes, experimental or not, whatever it is. At the five, yeah, I'm sure you might try it out there. I mean, if you look at strict fives, not fours playing fives, the Nets have Brook Lopez and Justin Hamilton, so I don't see why not.
Right. You talked earlier about, you know, trading Brook Lopez, and it seems like a thing that, again, if they're looking, I mean, for me, I would still like, he's your best player. Let's try to win some basketball games. But I guess if someone did come knocking with an offer, they would have to listen and probably accept. So you think he's going to get traded, and what kind of return do you think they might get?
Yeah, I actually spent a whole podcast episode on this. The thing with Lopez is, again, the Nets are short on assets and they want to get some promising young guys to rebuild around. So you look at the assets the Nets can get rid of in exchange for draft picks, and Lopez is number one, and mainly because his contract's running up, 2 more years, and the Nets don't want to pay him $30 million a year for he's known as a bit injury prone, and he's already up there in age. So the Nets are probably going to trade him now, right, before his deal is an expiring deal and it's less value there, or before he gets hurt and they can't trade him. So I don't think he makes it to pass the trade deadline with this team. And, you know, he can be valuable. Like, he's a good player. I think he's one of the more underrated players in the league, actually. Any fault that fans saw with him, he worked on. like his entire career. At first, it was rebounding. He's rebounding pretty well right now. If he doesn't rebound, he's boxing out. Defense, he's become a pretty passable defender, honestly. And now he's stepping back behind the arc. He's passing better. He's actually looking to find his teammates. He's a really good center. So I expect him to go probably during the trade deadline. The Nets will probably fetch like a mid to late first round pick for him, maybe some young guy that's about a fringe level young guy, like we're not really sure if he can become anything. I imagine that's the return for him.
Yeah, I was actually trying. One of the hardest things about trading him is even if a team wants him, is to match the salary. Like I was on the trade machine trying to come up with, like, I'm thinking like, you know, like maybe the Pacers would want him, or because like they're doing a big time win now thing. Like maybe they would give
him. I was thinking Dallas.
Yeah, like maybe Dallas would want to do it. But then most of these teams have to assemble $21 million worth of salary for a year.
It's hard.
And also to find that incoming salary that won't go past 2 years. You know, like I know the Pelicans would probably give you a first rounder if you wanted to take Omer Asik and Tyreek Evans. But it's like, you know, but then the Nets have to be like, oh, well, what do we do with, you know, all this? So I don't know. Like I could see him helping a lot of teams, but I'm also aware, you know, so many other teams are just optimistic about their centers that they're like, oh, we're good. You know, and then the other teams that might actually want them, it's so hard to match the salaries where I know even as how badly the Nets might want to move him, I just think it's going to be really tough because I don't see a lot of really, absolutely, I don't see buyers who have, you know, the right salaries to swap with them.
It won't be easy.
Speaking as a Grizzlies fan here, if they are just looking to, you know, get
no,
some.
No, you can't have a draft pick. Stop.
No, I don't. Well, you know,
everyone's been asking, Keith. Come on.
No. I'm saying, what would it take? Would a second rounder, or perhaps even giving your second rounder back to you that I believe you owe the Grizzlies, would a second rounder dislodge Bojan Bogdanović?
Oh.
I mean, he's on an expiring deal.
I was actually predicting last trade deadline that the Nets could fetch a couple second rounders for Bojan. I'm not sure. I don't know how high Atkinson and Marks are on Bogdanović. He's, the way I see him, sort of a poor man's 3-and-D guy. Like, he's a 3-and-D guy, sort of, you know?
Yeah, he's a 3 guy. I mean, he's an offensive player. You know, like.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart defensive guy. Like, he knows where to be. He doesn't really have the athleticism to keep up with a lot of guys. But, you know, he's not dragging you down defensively, I don't think. But, like, even on offense, right, he's really just kind of a spot-up 3 guy. When he tries to post up, it doesn't really go well. When he tries to drive, it doesn't really go well.
Here's the thing. Grizzlies, we just want a spot-up shooter. Great. Let's call it into the league office. Second-round pick, no problem. I actually was looking at the trade machine.
I don't see why not.
If you guys, to do salary matches, like if Jordan Adams and Andrew Harrison for Bojan Bogdanović works, hilariously, that makes the Grizzlies 4 games worse. According to the Hollinger, which I don't know how that's even possible, seeing how Andrew Harrison and Jordan Adams aren't going to play. All right, wrapping up, 2 questions. One, why not take a big risk with the, as I call him, Donuts Monta Ioannis? Like, he's just kind of sitting out there in limbo with the Rockets. And again, the Nets with a team with, you know, not a lot of upside seems like a fine gamble. Have you heard any talk about that or any reason why they wouldn't gamble on him?
I see a lot of people asking why the Nets haven't gone after him, and I'm not really sure. I mean, he would be a nice little gamble. I think a lot of teams should really gamble for him. He's a good player.
I mean, I'd rather gamble on him than Justin Hamilton becoming good.
Yeah, sure. You know? I agree.
All right, well, last question. As a Knicks fan, do you wish they had signed Jeremy Lin and not the Nets?
Ooh. Man, I think there's just so much bad blood there.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly, that whole situation was just such a mess. And even before then, there were so many, like, there was a lot of talk about Melo not being crazy about the whole Lin stardom thing. And I guess he's gotten over it because he's fine with Porzingis being the freaking god of New York. But yeah. It's, I don't know, it just feel like that never would have worked out again. It was like you break up with an ex and it's just an awful breakup, right?
Okay, yeah. So like, there's more than basketball reasons.
Yeah, I honestly think so. Yeah, because like if you think about it, what do the Knicks want out of Derrick Rose? It's a driving point guard, could score a little, create for others. Like Lynn probably does that better than Rose does right now. I'm sorry, but it's just what it is.
There's no question. There's no question. Yeah,
I'm actually surprised that we didn't get to talk about Lynn more because he. Let me tell you that any hype surrounding the Nets right now is about Jeremy Lynn, which is no surprise. He's Jeremy Lynn, but.
Well, I have all the time in the world if you want to tell me all about him, but, you know, just trying to get you out of here.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you with this. I think one of the big storylines to watch this season is basically there's been this little divide in Nets fandom. I don't know if there are any Nets fans on my side on this. I feel like it might just be like Nets fans versus maybe more realistic experts watching the game where you have Lynn coming into a situation where he's back in New York, really happy to be here, and basketball-wise, it's going to be a pretty good situation for him because he'll have the ball in his hands, he'll be a full-time starting point guard, he'll have semi-okay spacing, but the point is he'll have a motion offense and spread pick and rolls for him for days, and people think, oh, Linsanity's going to be back. He's worked hard in his game, he's worked hard in his defense, he's back in a position where he can really thrive. We're going to see Linsanity 2.0. Me, I think, yeah, he'll probably put up big numbers, but Linsanity 2.0, is he really going to, like, actually lead the Nets to any wins, like any substantial wins? Probably not. Is he going to be able to balance carrying the load offensively and still playing, like, decent defense? I'm not so sure. So I think watching to see what side he actually falls on is going to be fun this season. I'll leave y'all with that.
Yeah, and that's something I think we're – NBA fans, we're looking forward to. I mean, I thought the signing was great. I was actually surprised for how little he signed for. Like, I thought the Nets might have to pay a bigger premium. But yeah, man, like, he's got the ball in his hands. He has all the opportunity in the world, like, to see how far he can carry a team. And yeah, it'll probably be rough. I'm not sure if his shoulders can handle it all by himself. But anyway, hey, David, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you carving out some time for us. Can you tell people where they can read your stuff or hear you?
You can tweet me at @_Verts. Come subscribe to the Locked On Nets podcast on iTunes. You can look for my writing on Twitter, I guess. I tweet a lot.
Sounds perfect.
Oh, you know what? Go read my WNBA Finals preview.
There you go.
We'll talk on that.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks. Yeah, he's a great Twitter follow, _Verts. All right. Hey, thanks, David.
Thanks for having me on, man.
You got it, bud. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, thanks again to David Wurzberger for coming on the podcast and talking about not his favorite team, the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm actually excited we completed a trade. I think that's the first trade I've pitched to a fan or to a writer of one of these teams that they have accepted. So let's get this done, John Hollinger. Adding Bojan Bogdanovic costs him 4 wins. Come on now. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @FastBreakBreak. Like us on Facebook. Follow us at rabble.tv. Remember to write those reviews to win a box of Fan Essentials gear for your favorite team. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.